Welcome to Post Carbon Radio. On this segment, we're talking about progress being planned and made on clean energy in California and how you can participate. Our guest is Woody Hastings, Renewable Energy Manager at the Center for Climate Protection in Santa Rosa. Woody has been instrumental in helping communities in the Bay Area move their utility power to include more green energy options through the power of aggregation. Welcome, Woody.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen.
We're going to focus on the city and regional level, starting with the Bay Area and moving out from there. But first, I just feel like we can't have this conversation without mentioning the broader climate context that Trump administration just pulled out of the Paris Accords. But at the state level, California is moving ahead and setting targets, and local communities are coming along with them, and that's what we're going to focus on today. So I just wanted to give you a chance if there's anything you wanted to say about the administration's announcement.
Thanks, and thanks again for having me on. We have said for a while now that what happens at the local level is very important. So it's very disheartening and unfortunate and not a good thing that the administration has pulled us out of the Paris Accord. However, there is so much that can be done at the state level and at the local and regional level. So I think it just brings that work to the fore so much more.
Good. Well, that's exactly why we're having you on, so that we don't get stalled and stuck. So let's start with the Bay Area, and let's introduce a basic term. In case our listeners don't know, tell people what community choice aggregation is.
Yeah, community choice aggregation. We've sort of evolved to calling it community choice energy, far more familiar word, and it's available to cities and counties. Specifically, it's enabled by state law passed in 2002 that enables cities and counties to aggregate their residents and businesses, the electrical customers, to pool the purchasing authority and be able to purchase electricity on their behalf. So this is all about electricity. That's where the word aggregate comes in. But it gives that very important decision-making power to the local communities to be able to choose to purchase more solar, more wind, more geothermal, cleaner energy sources than the large utilities have heretofore done. There are state mandates for achieving renewable energy targets and goals, and so all of the utilities are obligated to achieve those goals, but community choice energy programs, and there are now 8 of them in the state, have been exceeding the state mandates. So it's a way for local communities to go even further, faster than the utilities or even than the state goals.
You know, I think it's very exciting and encouraging to hear that, because I think sometimes when we work on local politics, it's easy to feel like, oh, what does my little thing matter, my little community? But what I'm hearing from you is that it's really adding up.
Yeah, you know, when you think about what do these international agreements in large part result in, they result in the governments of each participating country to pass laws and regulations and rules and guidelines that tell us what to do sort of at the local level. So we don't need to wait for that. We can just do the work that needs to be done at the local level. And if more and more communities do this, it does make a difference. And what we do in California quite often is observed by the rest of the country and the rest of the world, so we can really be leaders on this. The Center for Climate Protection led the effort here in Sonoma County starting in the early 2000s, but more recently, roughly 2010, when I came on board to get Sonoma Clean Power, the second community choice energy agency up and running in the state, launched in 2014. Marin Clean Energy, as many of your listeners probably know, was the first one to launch in 2010. So there are now 8 operational in the state of California. Here in the Bay Area, it's really sort of the heart and soul of community choice. So we had Marin Clean Energy, Sonoma Clean Power. In 2016, Clean Power SF launched, as well as Peninsula Clean Energy. Clean Power SF is, of course, the San Francisco program. Peninsula Clean Energy, San Mateo, and about 20 cities. And more recently, just this past April, Silicon Valley Clean Energy launched. And there's a very interesting, exciting program underway in the East Bay Community Energy. So, you know, the entire San Francisco Bay Area is really being served by community choice energy programs more and more.
Well, that's exciting to hear about the East Bay, because I remember for a while they were sort of tagging along with Marin Clean Energy. Wasn't that right?
Well, there
Richmond?
Are some cities in Contra Costa County that are being served by Marin. Napa County is part of Marin MCE Clean Energy. And I think Contra Costa actually just voted to join MCE. But the East Bay Community Energy Program is all of Alameda County. It's a pretty big one because, you know,
yeah.
that includes Oakland. And so that sort of rounds out the Bay Area Community Choice lineup.
So all the nine Bay Area counties are covered at this point?
No, pretty close. Santa Clara's got Silicon Valley Clean Energy, so Solano is the only one that's not.
That's pretty amazingly fast. You've been driving a lot. Right?
I've been involved in some of them, but certainly not doing it single-handedly. There's a lot of people in each of these communities. That's what it's all about. It's about the communities themselves. We launched Sonoma Clean Power, worked on getting Sonoma Clean Power up and running in large part to create a replicable model that other communities could take on and launch, and so that is bearing fruit. Really, currently, I monitor community choice development all around the state. And there are 58 counties in the state of California, and roughly 27 out of the 58 are either in operational community choice or are evaluating it. And that means over 300 cities. We monitor that on a website called the Clean Power Exchange, cleanpowerexchange.org. And that's a website where you can go and you can see an interactive map that's updated weekly that has every single city and county in the state and what their status is relative to community choice energy. And we also have e-news that goes out every 2 weeks for folks that are interested in keeping track. All kinds of news and information, not just about community choice, but mostly community choice, but other renewable energy and energy efficiency and electric vehicle advances in the state of California.
Great. And you mentioned that the 27 of 58 counties that are either doing or evaluating clean power comprise over 300 cities. And I just want to bring that back to the national story that we've just had the mayors once again stepping up and saying, we're not going to stop. We're going to lead on clean energy, right?
That's right. There's the group of mayors that are, it's a growing list of mayors who have agreed to commit to maintaining the obligations in the Paris Agreement. And so that's, another way local governments can really stand up and help lead the way. And we're seeing that with community choice. We're seeing that with the mayors and other, other local leaders, really just sort of business community, all kinds of folks just saying, no, we're not going to go backwards. We're going to move forward.
And I wanted to ask you exactly about that, because you mentioned that a lot of different people are involved in bringing community choice energy to communities. Who typically gets involved? Who gets it rolling? And who does the hard work to get the political process to make it happen?
You know, it really varies from community to community. Each one has their own story in quite a lot of cases. It's local community advocates, activists that hear about community choice and talk to their city council representatives or county supervisor representatives. The community choice movement down in Los Angeles County, it can really be traced to the activity of one individual who really started just got excited about community choice and started bringing it to the South Bay, South Santa Monica Bay beach towns, and it grew from there, and now you've got all of LA County, not counting Los Angeles itself, because they're served by a public utility, Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, but the county and its 80-some-odd cities are in the process of launching a community choice program. So sometimes it's the activists and advocates, sometimes it's led by the actual elected leaders themselves. In the case of the city of Lancaster, down in Southern California, High Desert Community, it was really the mayor there, Rex Paris, who's another climate and clean energy leader. He's kind of cool because he's a Republican, and it's a conservative town, Lancaster is, but they got a lot of sun and a lot of land, and they recognize that it just makes economic sense, and Rex Paris understands the threat of the climate crisis, and so they are moving forward with a community choice program that's doing some innovative things with electric buses and with projects with their own municipal load that are sort of innovative with their local Lancaster Choice Energy Community Choice Program. And so it's a variety of ways that it gets spread. Sometimes it's people like me going around and talking to community groups and encouraging them to evaluate community choice. So, yeah, it's become a movement. And last October, the existing community choice agencies at that time, five of them got together and formed a formal association. So there is now a CCA, California Community Choice Association, that exists to defend community choice in the state legislature if threatening legislation comes along, but also to share resources on regulatory issues and things like that.
Great. Does this relate to, you mentioned to me you wanted to talk about the energy democracy movement?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's all about energy democracy. Community choice, you know, right there in the title about choice, one of the things that you necessarily have with community choice is a choice about your electricity service. You know, we've really been living for 100 years under a regulated monopoly system where if you lived in Marin County before 2010, you didn't have a choice. You don't opt in or opt out. You're paying your electric bill to PG&E. Now you have a choice because you can choose to be with Marin Clean Energy or opt out and be with Pacific Gas and Electric for your entire service. So, you know, it starts off with that. But the other thing is that, you know, folks should be aware community choice agencies are public agencies that are subject to the open meeting law. So all of the decision-making meetings of Marin Clean Energy are open to the public. You can go to those meetings in San Rafael and weigh in and hear what they're talking about and learn about the local programs that have added up to about 19 megawatts of deployment in and near Marin County over the past few years. And so other innovative programs that help get people into electric vehicles. And for geeks like me, it's fun talking about megawatts and power and efficiency and renewables and all that stuff. It can be very interesting, and there are things that can really relate to people's lives, like, you know, what kind of opportunities are there for me to, you know, save on my energy bill and or deploy my own rooftop solar and or get an electric vehicle or switch out gas, you know, fossil gas-powered appliances like water heaters and space heaters with electric heat pumps, things like that. And so those kinds of programs are what are available at MCE and Sonoma Clean Power and other community choice agencies.
So are these programs being funded by the revenue from the clean power subscribers?
That's how it works. Folks should know that, you know, community choice agencies, once they're up and running, they operate on the revenues received from the sale of electricity. So they're not taxpayer-funded. They operate on those revenues, and so all of them typically will operate in a sort of conservative way for the first couple of years to build reserves, and then once they're sort of got their sea legs and paid off their initial launch costs and whatnot, they use those revenues to develop local programs, to provide incentives, to create operational reserve funds and things like that to keep rates stable, to keep rates lower. By the way, the rates of all the community choice agencies have generally been a bit lower than the big utilities, and so that's another favorable aspect. Yeah, so I mean just lots of different opportunities where community choice is far more, you know, accessible, far more accountable, responsive to local needs. And so all those things feed into what we sort of fall under a rubric of energy democracy, really just sort of bringing energy decision-making back to the people. And, you know, it's happening in a larger context. You talk about the context of the sort of the Paris and the global, you know, agreements or disagreements on climate policy, but there's actually another large context, which is a global energy revolution where we're really evolving away from the old it was called the central station model, where you really have these huge coal nuclear power plants and then big, huge, long transmission lines bringing power to your house and you pay the bill and you don't ask too many questions. That whole picture is really evolving, and it's evolving to what's being called a distributed model or distributed energy resource model. And it is not just about the solar panels on the roof. It's about that. It's about the clean generation that can be decentralized and put right on the location where the power is needed, on a rooftop or a parking lot or backyard shade structure, things like that. like what I have at my house. But it's also about integrating it with electric vehicle charging and switching out petroleum-based transportation with clean electric transportation. It's, as I mentioned earlier, the fuel switching from fossil gas to electricity for space heating and water heating. There's really emerging now also the opportunities with the technology improving and costs coming down for energy storage, battery storage of power, both at the small scale, residential, small business scale, but also at the utility scale, so that we can really ultimately fully solve that problem, if you will, of power from wind and solar being intermittent. So storage is another energy resource coming onto the scene that I think is going to be really a big deal in terms of completing that transition from the old central station model to a distributed, clean, decentralized, more economically equitable energy world.
And it sounds like that would be a more resilient structure, too. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, I mean, think of it sort of like a whack-a-mole thing. It's if you've got multiple nodes of energy generation and multiple means of providing that power, more localized means, sort of a cellularized system where you've got a series of connected microgrids. People may have heard the term microgrid, and that's as what it sounds like. It's sort of it's got all the components of a larger grid, but it's on a smaller scale. So if you could think of a community that has its own generation source and its own means of maybe storing that, its own load, its own means of distributing the power through a distribution level system, if they've got all of those components, they can be islandable from the larger grid. So you could have every community could ultimately be its own sort of microgrid that is still interconnected. I mean, I think we're going to have the grid and need the grid for a long time, but over time it'll be more of a means of sharing power cell to cell, if you will, from microgrid to microgrid of the various communities.
Well, speaking of generation, you mentioned energy generation. Let's get back to the local, back in Marin. What is happening with Marin Clean Energy and local energy resource development?
Sure. Well, you know, there's, like I said, they've got, I think, close to 20 megawatts of power either currently online or in the pipeline, you know, in the process of being built. They recently completed a project actually over in Richmond, 2-megawatt project in a place called Freefy Park. So that's one of the most recent ones. But in Marin County, a cost plus location where they put solar panels on the rooftop and I think in the parking lots, about 265 kilowatts, which is enough to power about 100 homes, was put in last year. There's like about a half a dozen or so different projects. These are mostly solar. At the Buck Institute, there's a 1-megawatt carport project that's completed a while back. These projects are done through what's called a feed-in tariff, where Marin Clean Energy uses their revenues to pay a premium for clean power fed into the grid. So at these locations, and including, I think their first one was at the San Rafael Airport, so those feed clean power into the grid as a result of MCE being able to pay for that and, you know, the community wanting to have that in place. So those are some of the projects. They're also doing interesting things with electric vehicles and getting electric vehicle smart charging in place so that they can have a degree of control over how the vehicles, when they charge. You know, there's a lot of solar energy in the daytime, so having cars charge in the daytime is preferable.
So can we talk about the private business? Like, let's say the cost plus example. You said that made 265 kilowatts, which is enough to power 100 homes. So is it feeding all of the energy into the grid? Does cost plus get some of it? Presumably they're making some money off it, right? How does that break down in terms of who gets the power and who gets the money?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of that is used on-site at the Cost Plus itself. It feeds a big chunk of their load, and in fact, it may be all to that load, depending on, you know, what their daytime, a given load is during that course of that day. The 100 homes is just to give a sense of the magnitude of the amount of power that's produced. So that power need is offset by that 265-kilowatt installation.
Well, people can go to Marin Clean Energy to find out more, I'm sure, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they've got all of this information is readily available at mceCleanEnergy.org. That's where you can find out about everything, really, the rates, the billing, where the energy, what the energy sources are, what some of their programs are. You can opt up to their default product is 50% renewable, but you can pay a small premium and get 100% renewable. And some of that amount goes toward building a fund for developing more local renewables. And they also have a program called Local Sol that allows folks to buy into local solar projects directly so that you can actually point to the project that your electricity bill helps pay for.
Great.
A lot of stuff happening at the local level, but I also just mentioned, you know, they do contract for projects in other parts of the state, and they're responsible for solar projects being built in the Central Valley where people really need jobs. And I don't think I mentioned the Richmond 10-megawatt project on the Chevron property that's really created lots of jobs for folks in Richmond, and Richmond Build has been involved in that. There's been training and bringing at least 50% of the hiring for that project from the local community. So those kinds of things, helping Marin County itself, but also neighboring counties and other parts of the state by really putting more pressure on the renewable market and saying, yeah, this is what we want.
Well, you also mentioned that you could pay a premium in Marin Clean Energy and get 100% clean energy source power, and I'm going to seize on that 100% clean energy to move us to California statewide legislation for clean energy and climate. Do you want to give us a little update on what's going on there?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot going on at the state legislature right now. The season's in full swing, and there is actually a bill in play. Senator Kevin De Leon has introduced SB Senate Bill 100, which aims to have 100% of California's energy statewide be zero carbon renewable energy by the year 2045. So, you know, long-range goal, but it's, I think, really good to set the course for that. We've had a series of bills over the last few years. People may have heard, oh, we're going to have 33% by this year and various amounts over the years. They've really finally just decided, look, let's set a goal for 100%. And that's what this is all about. It just passed out of the Senate last week, and so it is on the Assembly side now. The way the bill works, or the process works, is it goes from one house to the other. So it's off to the Assembly side now, and they'll review the bill, and hopefully by sometime in August or September, it'll be on the governor's desk for him to sign. I think if it gets there, we can be pretty sure he would sign it. So that's SB 100. There's three others I wanted to mention, though, if I may.
Please.
So there are two by Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco. Actually, he's the representative from, he represents the part of San Francisco that includes Noe Valley, where I used to live. He has introduced two bills. One of them, SB 71, is basically a solar mandate for new construction. So all new homes, buildings built in the state of California by a certain date, I think it's in 2018 sometime, must include, to put it in simple terms, include solar. It's more complex than that because, you know, there's exemptions if there's reasons why it doesn't work in a given case, and there are also provisions for just making a home solar ready, that kind of thing. But it does basically mandate that all new construction should have solar installed in the state of California. So that's exciting. There are three cities in the state that already have solar ordinances. City of Lancaster was the first. Sebastopol was the second. Sebastopol right nearby in Sonoma County. And then San Francisco also has a requirement. All new construction must include solar. So that's pretty exciting. Then another one by Senator Wiener is a bill that was modeled. It's an energy storage incentive bill modeled on the very successful California Solar Initiative. Some of your listeners may be aware that part of the reason why we have such a good degree of solar deployment in the state of California is a result of legislation, the California Solar Initiative, that was a 10-year incentive program for folks to get a rebate if they installed solar at their home or business. Mm-hmm. And very successful. It helped reduce the cost of solar over those 10 years and to get lots of solar on people's roofs. This would essentially do the same thing, but with energy storage. So batteries are currently still pretty expensive, so this would allow for folks to get a rebate if they install a battery along with their solar system.
And did you have a bill number on that one?
That is SB 700. So the first one, the solar mandate, was SB 71. The other one is SB 700.
Okay. And going along with SB 100, which is the 100% target for 2045, we are running low on time, so I just wanted to see if there are any main points you wanted to make before we wrap up.
You know, the last bill was AB 262, and that's just a bill that gets the state of California to opt for the lowest greenhouse gas content materials in their purchasing. And I would just urge people to visit our website. Center for Climate Protection is climateprotection.org. Clean Power Exchange is cleanpowerexchange.org. And then the community choice agencies, you can find them all at that Clean Power Exchange, Sonoma Clean Power, Marin Clean Energy, and find out what they're up to. I just appreciate being on the show and hope that I was able to provide some interesting and helpful information.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Our guest has been Woody Hastings, Renewable Energy Manager at the Center for Climate Protection in Santa Rosa, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you very much, Woody.
Thanks, Karen. Take care.